universe she would be right now. A massive shadow approached through the trees, low and huge, with side-bent legs and immense splay-clawed feet. The immense shadow crashed closer, its walk a symphony of splintering trees. It was an Ankox. A massive armored saurian, the Ankox is the largest land animal on Harun Kaul. Ankoxes are twice the size of grassers, more than half again the mass of a full-grown bantha, but are built low and wide, with a broad dorsal shell like an oval soup plate turned upside down. The dorsal shell of this one was nearly 3 meters wide and well over 4 meters long. A drover's chair was bolted to the top of the Ankox's crown shell, a convex disc of armor that caps the Ankox's head. When an Ankox retracts its head and legs, its crown shell and all 6 knee shells fit into gaps in its armor as snugly as airlocks, enabling the Ankox to survive washes of volcanic gas that it cannot outrun. The drover did not sit, but stood wide-legged on the crown armor behind the chair, brandishing a long pole that ended in a sharp-looking hook to use as a goad in directing the Ankox's path. Kar Vastor. The air around him shimmered with his rage. The only part of the Ankox's body that is not armored is its extensile, muscular, surprisingly flexible tail. The tail is tipped with a thick round ball of armor, and an adult Ankox can snap its tail faster than the human eye can see, using that mace to accurately strike targets up to 8 meters away with enough power to stun an Ackdog or shatter a small tree. There was a time before the reopening of Harun Kaul to the civilized galaxy when a mace taken from a juvenile Ankox was the traditional weapon of Corrin herdsmen. Dangerous to acquire, difficult to use, deadly in effect. On the central bulge of this Ankox's dorsal shell had been built a howdah, small curtained cabin framed with lamus wood, 2 meters by 3, barely larger than the long padded chaise within. With the sunset behind, Mace could see her shape through the curtains. The Ankox crunched to a ponderous stop, settling onto its ventral shell with a long hiss through its teeth like gas venting from pneumatic landing jacks. Vastor tucked the goad into its holster, bolted to the Ankox's crown shell, then stepped forward over the drover chair and folded his thick muscled arms. He stared down into the eyes of the Jedi Master.
You were sent for.
Mace sighed, looking bored. Vastor's growl thickened.
Defiance carries a price.
Mace hooked his thumbs in his belt and walked casually forward. I told you already. I am not to be sent for. Since you have brought her to me as ordered, I'll see her now.
I don't take orders. Deepa is here at her own request.
Oh?
She came to say goodbye.
I'm not going anywhere. Vastor vaulted to the ground.
Make your goodbyes. Then you are leaving.
May sighed, still looking bored. Excuse me, he said, and sidestepped around the lower pelic to vault onto the dorsal shell of the Ankox. He had time to wonder if his pretense of confidence was fooling anyone. Mace looked up at the howdah, now only a step or two away. His mouth had gone entirely dry. He still couldn't feel her. Even this close, finally, after all this time, whatever presence she cast in the Force blended invisibly into the jungle night around them. A slim brown hand took one edge of the curtains. She drew the curtain aside. She sat on the edge of a long padded chaise. She wore the tatters of Jedi robes over the rough homespun of a jungle Corrin. Her face was every bit as thin as he had seen at the outpost, her cheekbones sharp and her jaw going prominent. The burn scar was there, from one corner of her hardship-thinned mouth to the point of her jaw. But instead of a blindfold, she wore the strip of dirty rag tied around her forehead, concealing the greater mark of illumination, or the scar it had left behind. The lesser mark still glinted gold on the bridge of her nose, and though her eyes were bloodshot and pain-haunted, her gaze was clear and level. And, after all, she was Deepa Balaba. "Mace," she said slowly, a single jewel of a tear welled in one eye. "Mace, Master Windu."
"Hello, Deepa."
He opened his vest and produced her lightsaber.
"I have kept this safe for you."
As she reached for it, her hand trembled even more. "Thank you, Master," she said slowly, with exhausted formality. "I am honored to receive it from your hand." Her smile turned more genuine. She looked down at her lightsaber, turning it over and over in her hand, as though she didn't quite remember what it was for. She lowered her head until he could no longer see her eyes. "Oh, Mace, how could you?"
"Deepa?"
"How could you be so arrogant, so stupid, so blind?" Though her words were angry, her voice was only tired. "I wish you should have come to me, Mace. You should have asked me. I could have told you."
"Why innocent children had to die?"
Her head hung even lower. "We all have to die, Mace."
"I'm not here to argue with you, Deepa. I'm here to take you home."
"Home," she echoed, and raised her head again. Her eyes were event horizons, infinitely deep and infinitely dark. "You use that word as though it means something."
"It does to me."
"But it doesn't. Not anymore. Not even to you. You just haven't realized it yet." She sighed a bleak, bitter chuckle, as dark as her eyes, and swung her trembling hand at the jungle around them. "This is home. As much home as any place will ever be. For any of us. For all of us. That's what I brought you here to learn, Mace. But now, you've fouled everything. It's falling apart and flying off in all directions. You have to leave here, Mace. You have to leave right now, or Carr will kill you."
"I'm planning on it," Mace agreed. "And you're coming with me."
"Oh," she said. The fire inside her dwindled, and her strength with it. "Oh, you think I can just leave?"
"You must leave, Deepa. I don't know what you think is holding you here."
"Do you understand that I am not in command here?"
May shrugged. "Is anyone?"
"Exactly," she said. "You are alive right now because Carr doesn't want to upset me. That's the only reason. Not because I can order him to do anything. Because I asked him. I asked to give you a chance to run away. Because Carr likes me."
Mace turned and looked down at the men and axe in the jungle. The Lor Pelek paced back and forth in front of the Ankox's head, stalking like a hungry vine cat, flicking glances up at Mace and Deepa and away again, as though he did not want to be caught looking.
"Vaster commands the ULF?"
"There is no ULF," Deepa hissed. "The ULF is a name, that's all. I made it up. The Upland Liberation Front is a make-believe bogey on which to blame every raid and ambush and theft and petty sabotage and I don't know what all."
"Your reports..."
"Reports?" She looked like she wanted to grab him and shake him, but was just too tired. "What should I have told you? You've seen a little of Harun Kaul. What could I have said to make you understand?"
"You don't have to make me understand. All you have to do is come with me."
"Mace, listen to me. I can't."
She sagged and lowered her face into her hands.
"Carr is willing to let you go only because I'm staying, to keep you away from me. If I leave with you, going through the jungle, Mace, think of it, on foot, on grassers, even in a steam crawler, all the way back to Pelek Baw? Haven't you seen enough of him today to know that nowhere in the jungle could you ever be safe?"
The weight in Mace's chest lightened, just a bit. He swallowed, and found that his breath came more easily. She was afraid for him. She had not fallen so far that she no longer cared.
That was his victory right there. The rest was just mop-up.
We won't be going through the jungle, he said. I have a ship on station with a regiment of troopers. Nick says you have subspace at the Lorshan Pass Caverns. We can be out of the system less than a day after we get there.
She lifted her head again, and there was still no hope in her eyes. It'll take 2 days to get there. If you're still here in 2 hours, Carr will kill you. 2 minutes.
Leave Vastor to me.
Mace leaned forward, resting his forearms on the howdah's polished rail.
I am not leaving without you.
You have to.
Let me put it another way. Mace took a deep breath. Master Deepa Bilaba, by my authority as a senior member of the Jedi Council and general of the Grand Army of the Republic, you are hereby relieved of command of Republic forces on Harun Kal, uniformed and irregular.
Deepa shook her head.
You can't. You can't.
Deepa, Mace said sadly, you are under arrest.
This is ridiculous.
Yes, and absolutely serious.
She nodded slowly, and she found a smile once more. A sad, quiet smile, edged with bitter knowledge.
Will you accept my parole? If I give my word not to attempt escape?
I will always trust you, Deepa.
Mace leapt lightly down from the Ankhaks.
Carr Vastor, we need to talk.
We do not.
Vastor did not meet his eyes.
I have Grossers saddled and supplied. Take them and the boy and go.
You know, May said, I don't much care for your tone.
Go!
Vastor's roar carried tectonic power.
Go before I forget my promise to spare you.
Mace turned to one of the Ack guards. Does he always yammer like this? He'd quiet down if you got him fixed. The Ack went pale. He shook his head urgently.
Really, really don't want to talk to Carr like this, you? Really, really, really?
Oh, right. Sure. He's not so good with basic.
Tendons stood out like cables in the Lord Pelek's neck. Slowly, deliberately, his left hand tucked behind the shield on his right arm. He pulled it down into fighting position, carefully avoiding its razor edges. Just as slowly and deliberately, he did the same with the other. Mace walked calmly out of the center of the ring, straight toward Vastor, thumb still hooked inside his vest. Looking straight up into Vastor's eyes, Mace swung his vest open to display the hand grip of his lightsaber. Then he shrugged out of the vest, folded it once, and tossed it over his shoulder with effortless accuracy, right into the hands of an astonished Nick Rostu, with his lightsaber still inside it.
That's how much you scare me.
Vastor shifted his weight to throw himself into a leap, but then froze as though an invisible leash had snapped tight around his neck. He glanced back at the shadow behind the curtains of the howdah for a moment. When he turned toward Mace once more, his lips were drawn back into a predator's grin, and his eyes burned like twin caldery.
Deepa prefers that you live, but she doesn't mind if you get hurt.
Mace shrugged.
As long as she won't mind when you get hurt.
Vastor began to unbuckle his shields. Mace turned his back on the Lord Pelek contemptuously and strolled toward the center of the ring of Ack and men. There was nothing either slow or deliberate about the way Vastor shook the shields off his arms. A whipping snap of the wrist that flung them down to clatter against the rim of the Ankhaks' shell. The Lord Pelek crouched and lowered one hand to the ground, digging into the leaf mold, his sweat-glistening chest heaving, breath-pumping darkness into him and out again, gathering rage, gathering power. The shimmer around him had gone from red to black. Mace shook his arms loose.
Rules?
Vastor's reply was the snort of a hunting ack.
Jungle rules.
A burst of power launched the Lord Pelek as a human missile, clawing its way through the twilight toward the Jedi Master.
Jungle rules it is then, Mace thought,
and leapt to meet him in midair. They collided with a crash that shook the jungle around them.
The collision was not just of two human bodies, but of two node channels of the Force. Invisible energy crackled, and vivid blue gap sparks arced from leaf to leaf in the canopy above. They hung in the air, supported by power, grappling, tearing at each other's flesh. Vaster seemed to be all teeth and claws and fierce snarling assault. Arms like girders of durasteel caught Mace in an unbreakable hug, pinning the Jedi's elbows to his creaking ribs. Mace answered swifter than thought, with an instinctive headbutt that split the skin on one of Vaster's cheekbones. The Lor Pelic lowered his head to Mace's shoulder as though to snuggle in like a lover, then sank his needle teeth deep into Mace's neck, chewing for his carotid artery. Mace jerked a knee up to slam the inside of Vaster's thigh. Vaster only grunted and bit down harder, twisting his head from side to side. His jaw pressure on the artery was restricting its blood flow. Billowing clouds of darkness gathered in Mace's brain. But when Mace fired the knee again, Vaster jerked his legs out of the way. Mace's knee caught him a decimeter below the navel. This brought a sharper grunt and a snarl that vibrated in Mace's neck. But instead of withdrawing his knee for another strike, Mace dug it in harder, forcing Vaster's body away from his own. This created just enough space that Mace could slip one arm up between their chests and could stab his stiffened fingers into the notch of Vaster's collarbone and shove. With a convulsive gasp of astonishment, the Lor Pelic released Mace's neck. Mace kept on shoving, jamming his fingers into Vaster's windpipe. Vaster gagged, and his massive arms loosened. Too engaged in intimate combat to maintain their flow with the Force, the power that had held them in the air deserted them, and they fell, tumbling. And as Mace finally pushed Vaster off him, he managed to sneak in a quick snapping kick to the point of Vaster's chin that sent the Lor Pelic whirling like a topspun ball. Mace recovered his Force touch in time to flip upright and land in a balanced crouch. Vaster landed on all fours, absorbing the shock as effortlessly as a vine cat. They looked at each other. Vaster's growl resonated in Mace's chest.
Not many men can break my grip. You won't do it twice.
Mace didn't answer. Vaster was probably right. Vaster stalked toward him on all fours. Without warning, Vaster's stalk became a lightning lunge, fingers hooked like talons, his arms sweeping wide to close on Mace once more. But Mace wasn't there anymore. A slight sidestep and a weave of his head snuck him to the outside of Vaster's lunge, and his fist whipped backhand to snap Vaster in the base of the skull as he passed. A knockout blow. But Vaster must have felt it coming. He pitched forward, rolling with the punch so that it flipped him end for end. He landed in perfect balance and sprang again, straight up. The kick Mace had aimed at his kidneys only grazed his calf muscle. He used the impact to whirl in the air so that he could fall upon the Jedi Master like a branch leopard taking a tusker. But what he fell upon was Mace's fist, driven upward into his solar plexus by the combined power of the Force and nearly 50 years of Jedi combat training. Mace's hand sank into the wrist, and Vaster's fighting snarl became an agonized struggle for breath. Mace used the Force to hurl him off and send him tumbling through the air to slam into the flank of an agitated Ackdog. Eyes glazing, half-stunned, the Lor Pelic slid bonelessly down the axe-armored ribs and staggered as his feet skidded over gnarled roots. Standing toe-to-toe, the top of Mace's head barely came to the level of Vaster's chin, and you could have tucked Mace's whole thick-muscled upper body inside Vaster's chest with room to spare. And even hurt, lurching drunkenly, Vaster still could whip his arms in blindingly fast raking slaps at Mace's head and wounded neck. But where Vaster's speed was blinding, Mace's was invisible. Not one of those slaps connected. Before Vaster could even focus his eyes, Mace had hit him 6 times, 2 thundering hooks to his short ribs, a knee slamming hard into the same thigh he'd hit before, an elbow snapping up to the point of his chin, and 2 devastating palm strikes to either hinge of his jaw.
This is called Vapad, Kar.
A fierce light burned in Mace's eyes.
How many arms do you see?
Then he hit Vaster 2 in the nose before the Lor Pelic could even blink. Vaster howled in pain and raging disbelief, falling back against the Ak-Dog's flank once more, twisting and turning to try to find some way to avoid the Jedi's flashing hands. The Lorpelek sprang sideways, diving away. Mace let him go.
Go and run, Carr. This is over. You lose. I'm the big dog here.
Vaster turned his dive into a roll and spun to face the Jedi Master from one knee. And before Mace had even finished speaking, the Force whirled around him, and Mace found himself wrenched off the ground, hurtling backward through the air to slam against the smooth-barked gray trunk of a meter-thick Lammas oak. The whole tree shivered with the impact, and a spiral galaxy birthed itself inside Mace's head.
He thought, I was wondering when we'd get to this part.
Vaster's face tightened. Strength must have been returning to his nerve-punched arms already, because he managed to raise one and gesture as though throwing a stone. Mace was whirled forward from the tree to crash against the skull of an astonished Ak-Dog. The impact folded him over the dog's head and blasted the breath from his lungs. The dog's crown spines gashed Mace's abdomen, and when it tossed Mace aside with a twitch of its head like a Nymalian water ox, his blood ran down the black outer shells of its eyes. Jedi Padawans learned to counter Force Kinesis before they even begin lightsaber training. Still in the air, Mace sensed the flow of power that held Vaster's grip upon him. With a sigh, he allowed his center, Vaster's point of Force contact, to relax and ground Vaster's power back into the jungle around them. And that jungle came to life. A grip leaf trailer snaked down from above and seized one of Mace's ankles in its unbreakable clutch. His airborne tumble became a wide swinging head down arc. Grip leaf trailers only become tighter as their victim struggles, and their fibers are nearly as strong as Durasteel cable. They cannot be broken by mortal strength. This one squeezed his ankle, drawing blood with the edges of its sharp waxy leaves. Another trailer reached down his other ankle, and from his upside-down vantage, he could see a thick blade-thorned length of brass vine curving toward his neck. He almost reached into the Force for his lightsaber, but that would be admitting defeat. Time to be clever. He used the Force to shove the grip-leaf trailer so that the arc of his swing sent him whirling out over the ring of dogs and men. One of the Ak-Guards smirked at him as he swung overhead.
Big dog, more like little tusk pig.
When his swing carried him back in, Mace reached down and grabbed the Ak-Guard by the arm, yanking him into the air. Drawing upon the Force for a burst of strength, Mace whipped the astonished guard up and over and used the edge of his razor-sharp shield to slice through the trailer before releasing him to flail helplessly through the air and crash into the jungle darkness. Mace turned his own fall into a flip that landed him on an Ak-Dog's shoulders. He bounded off into the air, and Vaster's Force grip seized him again. Vaster was on his feet now, and his arms didn't seem hurt at all. His blood-smeared mouth spread wide in a howl of triumph as he yanked Mace through the multicolored glowvine-shaded night, pulling him in while he opened his arms for that lethal embrace. Mace thought,
well, if you insist.
Instead of resisting or grounding the power of Vaster's Force grip, Mace added his own strength to it. The speed of his flight suddenly doubled. Vaster had only time to widen his eyes in dismay as Mace flipped headfirst in the air. The top of his head speared into Vaster's gut and drove the Lorpelek to the ground as though he'd been hit by a concussion missile. On the other hand, Vaster's stomach wasn't much softer than that Lammas oak. The impact didn't do Mace's head a lot of good either. Another spiral galaxy blossomed where the first had been as Mace rolled off him, lying on his back while he watched stellar clusters wheel inside his skull. Vaster lay beside him, making faint panting noises while he tried to pull air into his spasming chest. Vaster's breath began to return in great whooping gasps, and Mace knew his time was running out. He shook the stars out of his head and reached down to his ankle to unwrap the severed grip-leaf trailer. Limp now, dying, it was unresisting as an ordinary rope. Mace took one end in each fist, and as Vaster rolled over and gained his hands and knees, Mace slipped a loop of the trailer over Vaster's head from behind and tightened it around his throat. Vaster straightened, and his hands went to his throat, clawing at Mace's improvised garrote. but not even he was strong enough to break a Griffleaf trailer with his bare hands. His face darkened, swelling with blood. The back of his neck bulged. Veins writhed across his temples and forehead. 10 seconds, Mace thought, hanging on, wedging his knees into Vaster's back. 10 seconds and out. Vaster got 1 foot under him. Mace swallowed, gasping for breath, as he tried to tighten the trailer around the Lore Pelic's throat. In an eye blink, Vaster's grip shifted from the Griffleaf trailer to Mace's wrists. He threw himself forward, bent at the waist, and with a surge of incredible strength, yanked the Jedi Master over his head and slammed him bodily to the ground. The impact replaced the stars in Mace's head with billowing black nebulae. He'd never gotten his breath back properly after landing on the Ak-Dog, and now he couldn't breathe at all. The jungle above faded into a black haze. Through the darkness descending inside his skull, he barely caught a glimpse of Vaster leaping into the air to drop a body slam that would finish him. With a gasp, he rolled aside, and Vaster landed hard on the ground beside him. Mace dizzily tried to pull himself up to his hands and knees. Vaster was still down, his hands clawing weakly at Mace's flanks. Mace pushed him off and made it to his knees. Though Mace couldn't breathe, could barely see through the black and red haze inside his head, he could draw upon the Force to throw himself upright, and he lunged at Vaster, whirling, hands clasped together to deliver every erg of power at his command into one last thundering punch that lifted Vaster bodily off the ground, flipped him over backwards, and dropped him on the back of his neck. Mace swayed, almost out on his feet. The jungle hazed in and out of focus. All he could clearly see was the Lore Pelic climbing to his feet. Vaster was smiling.
Is that the best you have?
I'm just... Mace gasped for breath. His arms came up slowly. Each one felt like it was made out of Collapsium. Just getting started. One of those open-handed slaps flashed out of the darkness. The next thing of which Mace was aware was a bell-like ringing in his ears and the grip of Vaster's huge hand around his neck, holding him up off the jungle's floor. Mace's eyelids fluttered open. Vaster's blood-smeared grin was the only thing in the world. Vaster growled.
How many arms do you see?
Mace didn't answer. He certainly didn't see the one attached to the hand that snuffed the world like a blown-out candle. In the darkness, a smell of ammonia and rotten meat. Predator breath. A dry, rough tongue the size of his lost kit bag licked him back to consciousness, and Mace opened his eyes. The Ak guards were crowded around him, leaning over, their faces in deep shadow, haloed by the pulsing light of the glow vines in the canopy. One now pushed the nose of the Ak dog, who'd been licking Mace's unconscious body, so that the great beast backed up. Kar Vaster stepped into the gap. He barked something, and one of the Ak guards stepped away for a brief moment. The Ak guard returned, dragging Nick. Vaster growled. Nick said,
Hey, why are you telling me?
Vaster's growl sharpened, and Nick flinched away from him. Nick swallowed hard.
He says, Come on. You wanted to be the big dog. Get up and fight.
Nick lowered his voice.
I mean, you can get up, right? If you want to. I got odds. It's worth 500 creds. I'll split it with you.
No, Mace said. He couldn't find a place on his body that did not hurt.
No more fighting. I've had enough. You win.
Vaster seized Mace's shoulder in one enormous hand and stood, pulling the Jedi Master upright without apparent effort.
Tell them. Tell them who is the big dog here.
Mace hung his head, careful not to meet Vaster's eye.
You are.
He coughed, and blood bubbled from his smashed mouth.
You're the big dog. Tell them you were wrong to take my prisoners. Tell them you were wrong to let them go.
I was wrong to take your prisoners.
I was wrong to let them go.
Tell them you are sorry that you challenged me, and you will never do it again.
I am sorry that I challenged you. I will never challenge you again.
A twitch of motion in his peripheral vision. Nick had let Mace's vest unroll from his hand. Now he held it alongside his leg. He gave it another suggestive twitch. Mace could feel the lightsaber within it. He met Nick's eye. Nick deliberately looked away, miming a nonchalant whistle while he twitched the vest one more time. A twist of the Force, no more effort than Nick expended to wiggle the vest, would bring that lightsaber to Mace's hands. Mace said slowly, "Carr, my weapon is in that vest. May I have it?" He kept his eyes fixed resolutely on the Lord Pelleck's chest. "Please." Vastor took the vest and pulled Mace's lightsaber out of its pocket.
"This is yours?"
"Yes, Carr," Mace said quietly. "It's my only weapon. I won't be much good to anyone without it."
"You're not much good to anyone with it,"
Vastor grunted. He held it out to Mace, but when the Jedi Master extended a hesitant hand to take it, Vastor flipped it carelessly away from him. The Ack guard he'd purred at snatched it from the air. The guard held it in one hand. The vibro shield on his other arm whined to life.
"Carr."
Through the gauzy opacity of the curtained howdah above, Deepa's voice had an eerie power, and it seemed to come from everywhere at once.
"To send him out into the jungle without his weapon would be murder, Carr. He is not the enemy."
"Not your enemy, perhaps."
"Please, Carr, keep it safe for him and return it to him when he departs."
"He is departing now."
"He cannot travel," Deepa said. "Can you not feel it? You hurt him, Carr. Hurt him badly. He needs rest and medical treatment. Let us take him to the base. He can ride the Ankox with me. I'll keep him out of trouble. You can keep his lightsaber yourself. You've shown him he cannot face you without it."
Vastor's inhuman stare searched the blank face of the howdah, but now night had fully fallen. Glowvine light shimmered off the curtains, and nothing could be seen within. Finally, he gave an irritable shrug and extended a hand. The Ack guard tossed the hand grip back to him, and Vastor tucked it into the waistband of his catskin pants.
"You might remember that this all began because you refused to come when I told you."
"Yes," May said. "Yes, I remember."
He picked up the vest and slipped it on. The sting of dirt in open wounds announced that the Lammas Oak's bark had torn his back.
"If there is a next time, Doshalo, it will be your last time."
"Yes, Carr, I know."
He looked at Nick, who was now sitting on the ground, staring balefully at Vastor.
"Come on," Mace said softly. "I'll need you to help me up onto the Ankox."
From the private journals of Mace Windu.
"Vastor was willing to let Nick help me and treat my more serious injuries with supplies from a captured medpack. Nick was still simmering as he helped me to my feet, muttering under his breath a continuous stream of invective, characterizing Vastor as a lizard-faced frog-swallower and a demented scab-chewing turtle-sacker, and a variety of other names that I don't feel comfortable recording, even in a private journal. And he expressed the desire to see how tough that monkey hunker is with a frag grenade shoved up his... I told him I was sorry about his 500 credits, and pointed out to him, gently, that no one had told him to bet on me. He turned on me then, instantly furious, hissing savagely to keep his voice down, as the Ack guards and the dogs were still milling about. "This isn't about money. I don't care about the credits." He stopped himself, blinking, and his familiar smile flickered briefly across his lips. "Shee, did I really just say that? Wow. So okay, sure, I care about the money. I care about the money a lot. But that's not why I'm angry." I nodded and told him I understood. He was angry at me. He felt like I had let him down. "Not me," he said.
I mean, come on. Jedi are supposed to stand for something, aren't you? As Nick helped me up onto the Ankhaks, I discovered what had made him so angry with me. More than anything else, it was that I'd declared we had been wrong to free the prisoners. I don't care what you say, he muttered darkly. I don't care what Carr says. There were kids there, and wounded. I mean, those Balawai, they weren't evil. They were just people like us. It dawned on me then that Nick was proud of himself, proud of what we had done. I hope I never forget the fierce conviction on his face as he helped me climb the extended leg of the Ankhaks and clambered up onto its dorsal shell. Just because Carr beat you like a rented gong doesn't mean he was right. Just because he won doesn't mean you were wrong to challenge him. I can't believe you'd ever say those things, he said. His answer came from within the curtained darkness of the howdah at the top of the curved shell. If you spend much time around us, Nick, you will learn. Deepa's voice was strong and clear, and as sane and gentle as it has always been in my heart. You will learn that Jedi do not always tell the truth. She pulled back the curtain once more and pushed open the small swing gate in the rail. Come on in. You look like you might want to lie down. I might, I admitted. This hasn't been my best couple of days. She took my hand to steady me as I stepped into the howdah, and she made room for me on the chaise. I have to hand it to you, Mace, she said with a softly ironic smile. You still take a beating as well as any man in the galaxy. Nick's eyes bulged as though his head might explode. I knew it. He shook a fiercely triumphant fist in my face. I knew it. I knew you could take him. We share a bond in the Force now, Nick. Did it feel like I threw the fight? He shook his head. As you said earlier, Vastor is a difficult man to lie to. He would have known if I was holding back. Then the beating would have been much worse, and he might very well have killed me. What I did was pick a fight I knew I couldn't win. Couldn't? He said. Vastor is very powerful. Half my age and twice my size. Training and experience can compensate only up to a point, and he is naturally ferocious in a way that no Jedi can duplicate. Nick said, You're telling me you twisted his nose like that, knowing he was gonna beat you so bad your whole family would bleed? I shrugged. I didn't have to win. All I had to do was fight.
From the private journals of Mace Windu.
Carr Shatterpoint, Deepa murmured. You saw it all along. I nodded. I explained that a fight between Carr and myself was inevitable. Two alpha males in the same pack. I could smell it on him even during the battle at the outpost when we first met. My only hope of a good outcome was to make it personal and immediate. And unarmed. If the fight hadn't happened, he and the axe might very well have killed Nick and me both for setting free the prisoners. If he and I had gone at it blade to shield, I would be dead now. Even if I'd killed him, the Ack guards and the dogs would have torn me to shreds, and Deepa too, if she'd tried to save me. We'd only barely survived being attacked by three Acks in the Circus Horrificus. Against a dozen? Well, it didn't happen that way, because I knew what Carr really wanted in the grip as he was of his alpha male jungle instincts. He wanted me to submit. And, like many other pack hunters, once his rival has submitted, his instincts led him to allow that rival to peacefully sniff around the fringes of his pack, so long as I did not renew my challenge. That's why you gave him your lightsaber, so he wouldn't feel threatened, Nick said. I shook my head, and for a moment I was tempted to smile. No, I would have let him cut it up. You would. If it would make him more comfortable with letting me stay, of course. A lightsaber can be repaired or rebuilt. But I admit, Deepa's idea was a stroke of genius. She smiled at me. I am a bit proud of myself for that. Nick again expressed his confusion, and I explained. Even with the Force, I can't pick Carr out from the jungle around us. He is so much a part of it, and it of him, that he's practically invisible. My lightsaber, on the other hand.
I get it, Nick breathed.
As long as he carries it.
Exactly.
I could feel it even now. I knew, without thinking its precise position relative to my own. It is a bell collar that Deepa managed to buckle onto a singularly ferocious vinecat.
From the private journals of Mace Windu.
Much of the day we spent talking about Carr Vastor. Deepa has spared me many of the less savory details, but she has told me enough. More than enough. For example, when he calls me Doshalo, it's not just an expression. If what he has told Deepa is the truth, Carr Vastor and I are the last of the Windu. When I think of my Doshalai dead and scattered, Windu heritage and traditions perishing in blood and darkness, I feel only abstract sadness. Any tale of pointless suffering and loss is sad to me. I would change them all if I could, not just my own. I would certainly change Carr's. It seems that, as a young man, Carr Vastor was fairly ordinary. More in touch with Pelikotan than most, but not in any other way unusual. When he was 14, he saw his whole family massacred by jungle prospectors. One of the casual atrocities that characterized this war. I do not know how it is that he alone escaped. The stories Deepa has heard from various Kurenai are contradictory. Carr himself, it seems, will not discuss it. What we do know is that after witnessing the murders of his entire family, he was left alone in the jungle, without weapons, without grasses, without axe or people, food or supplies of any kind, and that he lived in the jungle, alone, for more than a standard year. This is what he meant when he said he had survived Tan Peltrokal. I believe that his ability to form human speech was part of the price he paid for his survival. All Jedi know that power must be paid for. The Force maintains a balance that cannot be defied. Pelikotan traded him power for his humanity. It was earlier this evening that I learned the real truth of Carr Vastor, not only who he is and why he is, but what he means. Somewhere along our line of march, Carr had located a cave that he deemed adequate to shelter a fire from gunship or satellite detection, and so he set about curing Besh and Chalk's fever wasp infestation. Besh and Chalk had remained in phenatazine suspension, tied to a grasses travoy like a bundle of cargo. Deepa was in attendance, as was I, as well as a select few others. A pair of the Ak guards had carried her, Shez and all, in from her howdah. She lay back with one slim arm across her eyes. She was having another of her headaches, and the light from the fire of Tirun, the local wood that burns white hot, was causing her pain. I suspect she might have preferred to skip the whole business. Even so, when Carr laid the still forms of Besh and Chalk face down on the mossy floor of the cave and tore open the backs of their tunics, Deepa stirred and sat forward. Carr simply squatted beside the two, humming tunelessly under his breath, while a Quarren I did not recognize injected them with the antidote. Vastor's humming deepened and found a pulsing rhythm like the slow beat of a human heart. He extended his hands and closed his eyes and hummed, and I could feel motion in the Force, a swirl of power very unlike any I felt from a Jedi healer, or anyone else for that matter. A streak of red painted itself along their spines, and a moment later, this red suddenly blossomed into the glistening wetness of fresh blood oozing through their skin. And details, I suppose, are unnecessary. Suffice it to say that Carr had somehow used the Force, used Pelikotan, to persuade the fever wasp larvae that they were in the wrong place to hatch. Using the same animal tropism that draws them from the site of the wasp's sting to cluster along the victim's central nervous system, Carr induced them to migrate out of Besh and Chalk entirely. And such was his power that the entire wriggling mass of them, nearly a kilo all told, squirmed its way straight into the blaze, where the larvae popped while they roasted with a stench like burning hair. In the midst of this extraordinary display, Deepa leaned close to me and whispered, "Don't you ever wonder if we might be wrong? I didn't understand what she was talking about, and she told me how she and Carvaster had managed to drive the Separatists off this world.
The Confederacy had been using the Pelagbaugh spaceport as a base for the repair, refit, and resupply of the droid starfighters they had used to picket the Al-Ha system. These operations required large numbers of civilian employees. Her strategy was simple. She proved to these civilian employees that the Separatist military and the Balawai militia together were powerless to protect them. There was no pitched battle, nothing heroic or colorful, just an unending series of gruesome killings, one or two at a time. At first, the Separatists had flooded Pelagbaugh with their forces, but battle droids are as vulnerable to the metal-eating fungi as are simple blasters, and the soldiers of flesh and blood die just as easily as civilians. The essence of guerrilla warfare. The real target is not the enemy's emplacements or even their lives. The target is the enemy's will to fight. Wars are won not by killing enemies, but by terrorizing them until they give up and go home. "That's why I brought you to Harun Kaul," she said. "I wanted to show you what winning soldiers will look like." She pointed past the fire. "That is the Jedi of the future, Mace. Right there." She was pointing at Carvaster. "Which is why, at this black hour, long after midnight and long before dawn, as the glow vines weaken and predators go quiet, when only sleep has meaning, I lie upon my bedroll and stare at the black leaves above and think of tomorrow. Tomorrow, we leave this place." The air above the Lorshan Pass was so clear that the sky-colored peak Mace could barely discern in the distant south might have been Grandfather's shoulder itself. There was a pall of brown haze down in that direction that he suspected was the smog over Pelagbaugh. In the nearer distance, tiny silver flecks of gunships patrolled the jungle canopy below the pass. A lot of gunships. Mace had counted at least 6 flights, possibly as many as 10, weaving among the hills. He sat cross-legged on the shadowed dirt of the cave mouth's floor, his datapad slung on his shoulder. Only 2 meters away, brilliant late afternoon sunlight slanted across the cliffside meadow. A grassy sward, relatively flat for a few tens of meters, before it curled over the lip of the cliff and dropped half a click to the pass below. Easily large enough for a Republic Fleet Systems Jadthu class lander. Mace determinedly avoided staring up into the sky. It would get there when it got there. Only minutes to go now. Behind him, Nick's pacing had scuffed a path through the thin layer of dirt to the stone of the cave floor. He picked up his rifle from where it leaned against the wall, checked the action for the dozenth time, and set it back down again. He did the same with the slug pistol holstered at his thigh, then looked around for something else to do. Not finding anything, he went back to pacing. How much longer? Not long. You sure she's coming? Yes, Mace lied. Nick squatted alongside the Jedi Master and nodded at the datapad.
Got any games on that thing? I'd even play Dejarik, and I hate Dejarik.
Mace shook his head. It's my journal.
I've seen you talking into it. Like a diary?
Something like that. It's a personal log of my experiences on Harun Kaul, for the Temple Archives.
Wow! Am I in there?
Yes. And Chalk, and Besh, and Lesh, Deepa and Carvaster, and the children from the outpost.
Could I listen to some?
Nick tried an encouraging nod.
Not like I'm nosy or anything, but it passed the time.
Are you certain you want to know what I think of you?
Sure I'm si- Why, is it bad?
He asked with an anticipatory wince.
It's really bad, isn't it?
I'm teasing you, Nick. I can't play it for you. It's encrypted. And only the Archive Masters at the Temple have the code key.
What? You can't even listen to it yourself?
Not only does encryption keep its content secure, it protects me from the temptation to go back and edit entries to make myself look better.
You do that?
The opportunity has not presented itself. If I had the chance, I can't really say. I hope that I would resist, but Jedi or not, I am still human. He shrugged. I should make a last entry.
preparatory to my formal report to the Council on our return to Coruscant.
Can I listen?
I suppose you can. I have nothing to say that you don't already know.
From the private journals of Mace Windu, final Harun Call entry.
Major Rostu and I wait in a cave at the Koran base in the Lorshan Pass. Deepa...
Hey, is that on? So they can, like, hear me?
Yes, it's working.
Wow! So some weird alien Jedi a thousand years from now can pull this out and it'll be like I'm saying hi to him from a thousand years ago, huh?
Hi, you creepy Jedi monkey hunker, whoever you...
Major.
Yeah, I know.
Shut up, Nick.
Deepa is to meet us here. She has some stratagem to get Kar Vastar and his Atguards far enough away for us all to make a clean extraction. She did not offer details, and I did not ask. I was afraid to hear what she might have told me. The signal was sent early this morning, using the same technique her sporadic reports had. I heard the acknowledgement myself in the base's comm station. The Holoc is on its way. We arrived at this base about a standard hour after sunrise. The Holoc is probably in system by now. The base itself is not what I was expecting. It's less a military base than an underground refugee camp. Thousands of Koranai cram these caverns and tunnels and caves, and more trickle in every day. These are the non-combatants, the wives and the parents, the sick and the wounded, and the children. The global lack of mining equipment means that ventilation is necessarily rudimentary, and sanitation virtually non-existent. There are several surgical field generators here in the base as well, salvaged from downed gunships. It may be these alone that makes life in these caverns possible at all. The largest caverns have been given over to the grassers. All the arriving Koranai bring whatever grassers survive the trip. These grassers spend their days crowded together with no food and little room to move. They are all sickly and restive. The Koranai tend them as best they can. Improvised fences of piled cut rock separate the various herds, and they are driven out the access tunnels in turns to forage in the jungles below the pass, under the watchful eyes of herding Axe. I do understand now why Deepa doesn't want to leave. We rode her Angkoks right up one of the concealed tunnels. When we left the gloom of the jungle for the deeper darkness underground, Deepa pulled back the curtains of her howdah and moved forward to the chair mounted on the beast's crown armor, and she seemed to inhale serenity with the thick, stinking air. Everyone we passed, everyone we saw, there was no cheering or even shouts. The welcome she got was more profound than anything that can be expressed by voice. Deepa is more than a Jedi to them, not a goddess. Force users themselves, they are not easily impressed by Jedi powers. She is, I think, a totem. She is to them what a Jedi should be to everyone, but writ so large upon their hearts that it has become a form of madness. She is their hope.
It's true, you know.
Nick...
You think things are bad here? Okay, sure, they're bad. Not just here, the whole island. Bad enough. But you got no idea what it was before, Deepa. You know, we're not the bad guys here.
No one has suggested that you are. Nor are you the good guys. I haven't seen any good guys.
So far, I've seen one. Two.
She is dying, Nick. The war is killing her. This planet is killing her. The Koranai are killing her.
Nobody here would ever hurt her.
Not on purpose, but she is drowning in your anger, Nick.
Hey, I'm just mildly cranky.
Not you personally. All of you. This whole place. The unending violence without hope or remedy. So, the Holoc must be in system by now. We should be seeing Galander's vapor trail any minute. And Deepa is headed up to meet us.
She is? What, you can feel her?
I can feel clearly the approach of my lightsaber, and now I feel hers as well, winding toward us through the natural fissures in the rock that make a passageway from this cave to the interior caverns. It is odd, in an apprehensive premonition of dreadful tragedy sort of way, that I can feel Deepa, the Deepa I know, only in her weapon.
Does that whatever of dreadful tragedy by any chance translate into basic as I have a bad feeling about this? Because, you know, now that you mention it...
I feel it, too. But I have had only bad feelings ever since I came to this planet.
I've been wondering. I mean, we've been up here a long time. Haven't you started to wonder if Deepa didn't send us up here so she can get Carr out of the way? If she sent us up here to get us out of the way?
This has occurred to me. I have refused to allow myself to consider it. Deepa is not like that. She's not given to trickery, much less betrayal. She has said she will join us here. That means she will join us here. I mean, she's only steps away.
Or maybe, you know, not.
You.
That's far enough. Stop. I mean it.
End journal.
Nick stood in a classic shooter stance, slug pistol in his right hand, left shoulder forward, right arm straight across his body, left hand cupping his right and the pistol's butt. His target was a needle-pointed grin just visible within the fissure at the back of the cave. Mace came to his feet smoothly but deliberately, without any sudden motion.
Don't do it, Nick. I've seen him block blaster bolts. He can do the same with bullets. You won't have a chance.
Says you.
His voice was uncharacteristically calm and flat, and his hands were as steady as the mountain around them.
You haven't seen me shoot.
This is the wrong time to show me.
Mace put one hand on Nick's arm and just let its tired weight pull the pistol down.
Come on out, Carr.
The darkness in the fissure gathered itself into the shape of the Lor Pelic. His vibro shields were pushed back onto his upper arms. In his hands, he held two lightsabers. Mace sagged as all hope and faith drained out of him. Only exhaustion remained. He had been trying so hard for so long to believe in her, and in himself, and in the Force. He had made himself believe. He had ruthlessly disciplined his mind against any dread of failure. After all, this was Deepa, his Padawan, almost his child. He had known her all her life. All but her first few months and her last few months. Vastor walked past Nick, holding the lightsabers on his open palms.
A peace offering. She asked me to.
I know, Mace murmured.
She said she did not want you to lose anything more by coming here than you already have.
I haven't.
And it was true. He had lost nothing real. Not on Harun Kaul. He had lost her before he'd ever set foot on the shuttle's landing ramp. He had lost her before the massacre and the message on the crystal. He had lost her before he even sent her here. Deepa Bilaba was another casualty of his failure at Geonosis. She was just taking longer to die.
So this is the kiss-off, huh?
Nick had his gun back in its holster, but he looked like he was shooting at Vastor inside his head.
The kiss-off's bad enough, but to send her lightsaber along so you'd think it was her?
That's not why she sent it, Mace said softly. Carr's given them both to me.
Vastor's growl was absolute as a vine cat's stare. Pitiless, but somehow not unsympathetic.
She said you would understand.
Mace nodded distantly.
She has no use for it anymore.
Nick frowned at him.
She doesn't?
It is the weapon of a Jedi.
Oh, you mean...
Yes.
Mace closed his eyes.
It's killing her, he said faintly. Being here, doing these things. If she stays, she will die.
Everyone dies, Doshalo. But Harun Kaul is not her problem. This is her place. She belongs here. The jungle isn't killing her. You are.
Mace opened his eyes to meet the Lor Pelic's concentrated stare.
She never stops thinking of you. What is killing her is imagining what you must think of her. What she knows you think of what she has done and will do. This is why she sent me to deliver these weapons. And
her goodbyes. She could not face you.
Mace breathed a heavy sigh, then straightened his shoulders. She, he said slowly, sadly, reluctantly, will have to get over that.
Huh?
I'm sorry this is painful for her. It's not fun for me either. The closest thing to fun I've had on this planet was being beaten into unconsciousness, he said. I told her I would not leave this world without her, and I won't. Nothing has changed.
You think not? Step out here, Doshalo.
The Lor Pelek walked out of the cave shadow into the brilliant red-smeared afternoon on the cliffside meadow.
This is not the only cave on this mountain.
Mace followed him, and Carr waved a lightsaber at the vast mountainside, pocked with shadows.
In one of them waits one of my men. Over the past months, we have captured some heavy infantry weapons from the Balawai. One of those weapons is a shoulder-fired proton torpedo launcher.
Threats will not move me, Carr. I have told her that I will die here rather than leave her behind.
You misunderstand. Soon the Landa will arrive to take you away from here. If you do not leave on it, my man will destroy it. Your pilots and gunners and soldiers and whoever else who has come to bring you away, they will all die.
What's wrong? Nick asked from the shadows. A great deal is wrong, Mace replied. He has said nothing of consequence. And no, we are not leaving. Not without Deepa.
I do not make idle threats.
That you are here means I did not know Deepa as well as I thought I did. That the two of you would expect me to bow to this threat means that she knows me even less.
The Landa will be destroyed. It will be as though you have killed them yourself.
There is no as though. Mace turned and lifted his head to look Carvaster in the eye. What it will be is you, Carvaster, taking up arms against the Republic. Carvaster, Mace said flatly, you are charged with the murder of Terrell Nakai.
Deepa is right. Jedi are insane.
Vaster paced meditatively away from Mace, strolling toward the meadow's cliff lip, and stared out over the vast roll of jungle below. The vista was alive with gunmetal specks and distant flashes of cannon fire.
Many gunships patrolled today. More than I have ever seen.
Mace walked out to join Vaster at the edge of the cliff.
I have tried.
Vaster purred when Mace reached his side.
I have done all that can be asked of me. Not even Deepa can say I did not try to spare your life. But you will not be reasonable.
That is true. Do we fight now?
We must.
Vaster bent his head in a regretful nod of respect.
Goodbye, Mace. Jedi of the Windu.
A tiny surge of the Force. Just a twitch, a shrug, the slightest nudge, not even directed at Mace, sent off somewhere into the